This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at Burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at Burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey guys, and welcome to Paranormal Thoughts Podcast. And as always, thanks for joining me. In this episode, we're talking with Tim the Yowie Man. Tim is an Australian paranormal researcher. He explores all sorts of different topics within the paranormal realm, but what we mainly talk about today is the Yowie. You know, it's right there in his name, Tim the Yowie Man. But what a Yowie is, without getting too much into it, because we're going to talk about this, it's pretty much the Australian Bigfoot. So Tim had an encounter quite some years ago now, and ever since that time he kind of changed the direction of his life path and decided to really dedicate his life and his time into the paranormal world. So really big thanks for Tim coming out on the podcast and having a bit of a chat with us. I just want to say, jump onto Tim's website, www.yowieman.com.au. There you'll be able to find all sorts of information, some videos, Tim's latest book as well, of course, which is Tim the Yowie Man, Haunted and Mysterious Australia. And while you're checking out Tim, jump onto his YouTube page and his Facebook to keep up to date with all the many things that Tim is currently working on. Just like to thank Tim for coming on the podcast. I had a really great chat, and I think you guys are really going to enjoy this one. Thanks. Tim, why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself? Because a lot of my listeners are based in the States. So, you know, seeing the name Tim the Yowie Man, I'm sure they're probably, some of them might know, but I'm sure a lot of people are even confused what a Yowie even is. So feel free to elaborate on a bit of your background.
Yeah, so Tim the Yowie Man is a bit of a strange name. And Yowie, I guess for the uninitiated, is the Australian version of Bigfoot or Sasquatch. And I'm called Tim the Yowie Man, not because I look like a Yowie, although some people claim after I haven't shaved for a while, maybe I do, but because I've spent the last quarter of a century or so researching and looking for the Yowie, particularly after I had a sighting back in 1994. I was sort of fascinated with this large, hairy, bipedal-like creature that many people spot in the Australian bush. I had my own encounter and thought, heck, I need to get to the bottom of this mystery somehow. I'm going to go out there and see what I can find. So a few of my friends at that time said, hey, let's call you the Yowie Hunter. And I thought, you know, Hunter conjures up sort of all sorts of images of people running around with weapons and nets and the like. I'm more out there just trying to find evidence, or was at least at that time trying to find evidence of the Yowie. So I said, no, if you're going to call me Yowie something, not Yowie Hunter, how about Yowie Man? So that's how the name came about.
Nice. When you put Hunter onto any sort of name, it does sort of paint a bit of a negative picture of it, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. And I think that it might be a bit of a difference between Australia and the US, for example, where in my experience in going to the US, there are portions of the Bigfoot Sasquatch community, certainly not all, that do want to go out there and bag a Sasquatch, bag a Bigfoot, bring one in, preferably alive, but if they've got to shoot one, then so be it. Whereas I think in Australia, most people that research and are out there in the field would rather just observe it and collect evidence and not necessarily hunt it, so to speak.
Before you had this sighting, did you have any previous interest in anything paranormal or anything along those lines?
Interestingly, not really. I do recall when I was at primary school, we were given a group task, I think in year six, so that was aged around 12 or 13, to sort of design the front page of a local newspaper. And I don't think it was me, but someone else in our group of three or four classmates said, hey, let's do a story that a Bigfoot's been sighted on the local mountain, which was a mountain called Mount Gibraltar at a place in Barrel, just south of Sydney. And we all went along with it because it was all sort of fictional, a make-believe sort of, you know, front page. And we sort of said, you know, Bigfoot spotted on Mount Gibraltar. And we sort of wrote a story, an article about, you know, a fictional person having an encounter. From what I can recall, that's my sort of only, I don't know even if you call it interest, but only sort of experience, I guess, even with the word Bigfoot or Yowie or Sasquatch prior to my sighting, which was then some 10 years or so later. So, yeah, I never grew up being one of those people that wanted to go out and try and find a mystery, whether it was a ghost, a Yowie, a sea serpent or anything like that. It was just like anyone else, and the sighting in 1994 of seeing something with my own eyes, I guess that was a life-changing event which sent me on this path of being Tim the Yowie Man.
Interesting. I think, yeah, that's actually a really sort of funny coincidence, isn't it? You doing this project at school about Bigfoot sighting and then all of a sudden, you know, you've sort of ended up right in the middle of that.
Yeah, it's bizarre, and I probably wouldn't have even remembered the fact I'd done that until I sort of had my own encounter, and I sort of a few years later, I was flicking through some of my old schoolwork in clearing out some boxes in the house, and came across this front page of a newspaper, pretend front page, and it was I thought, geez, maybe I was destined to be a Yowie man of some sort since way back then. But yeah, but the interesting thing there was that it was others that in the class that came up with the idea, not me. I wasn't by any means obsessed nor really interested in any way more than the average person on the street.
So can you tell us a little bit about the encounter you had in 94?
Yeah, sure. So I was at university by that time, and I was collecting information on on how bushwalkers value a national park. So I was doing an honours degree in economics at the Australian University in Canberra, again south of Sydney, and I was trying to place a dollar value on this national park, which was free to enter at the time. And being an economist or studying economics, you know, everything has a value. So I was looking for bushwalkers up in this remote national park, now called Brindabella National Park, looking for people to interview and ask them, you know, how much they appreciated going there and how much they'd pay if there was an entrance fee and the like. And it's a pretty, it's not like a highly populated or visited area, not like a Yellowstone or, you know, or Yosemite or anything like that. This national park receives maybe dozens of visitors a day. So it's pretty hard to find anyone. On this particular day, I'd found a few bushwalkers and had interviewed them. And then it was around dusk. I was sort of on my way back to my vehicle, sort of resigned to the fact I wasn't going to find any other bushwalkers to interview that day. And was walking along this mountain spur or ridgeline covered with eucalypts or gum trees and sort of like an open forest. So there was grass up to sort of the knee height and bushes and then taller trees, you know, much, much higher. And out of the corner of my eye, I saw this movement, and I sort of thought, well, what's there? Natural reaction, sort of looked up on the hill. And there, in my sight, about 100 meters or so away, was this creature which I was scared because it was this big, bulky, black-haired, ape-like creature. All I could think of was, this looks like an ape, was my immediate reaction. But in the space of seconds, I was thinking, well, it can't be an ape. We live here in Australia. There's no apes. It's got to be some sort of mutated kangaroo. So I sort of glanced back. No, definitely wasn't a kangaroo. A kangaroo and an ape look like two different things. At this stage, I was quite frightened. I was scared, and I scared of the unknown. This creature wasn't attacking me, nor do I think it even showed any signs that it knew I was there. So my immediate reaction was to turn and run because I wasn't too far to get back to the car. But then I thought, well, if I run, this thing, whatever it might be, it will probably see me and it might chase me. It might hurt me. So I made a decision, spur of the moment, to sort of just walk backwards very slowly and quietly, but at the whole time keeping my eye on this creature. When I got back to a fire trail, which was only a few meters behind me, thankfully, this walking back had taken, when I was doing it, felt like it took minutes, but on reflection was probably, you know, 10 seconds or so. I got back to the fire trail, and then when I knew I had a clear run to the car, I turned and I ran to the car. I was scared, and I got in the car and I drove back down through the mountains back to my home as quick as I could. I couldn't believe what I'd just seen.
Yeah, you wouldn't really want to be hanging around when you have no idea what this massive black hairy ape-looking thing is.
And at that time, of course, I had no idea of the rich history and reports of similar beasts in Australia. You know, I'd heard, as we've discussed before, as we discussed earlier, you know, Bigfoot and Sasquatch, and I'd heard of a abominable snowman and the Yeti and in the odd movie prior to that, but I'd never associated the creature or similar creature with Australia. So when I got back to my my university residence, I actually kept quiet for quite some time, not really wanting to tell anyone for fear of people laughing at me. And it took a little while, and eventually I mentioned it to some mates, and they surprisingly didn't take the mickey out of me. They one of them had actually read a recently published book on sort of mysteries of Australia, which had included references to a Yowie, an Australian Bigfoot. And he passed me the book, and I had a sort of read of it, flicked through the pages and looked at some of the sketches and the like, and immediately thought, well, what I've seen is one of these. I've seen a Yowie, and gave me great, I guess I was comfort to feel that others had been seeing these creatures for thousands of years in the case of Indigenous peoples, and hundreds of years for European settlers to the country. I felt like, you know, I wasn't insane. I wasn't a madman after all. Others had seen this, but still, you know, what this creature was, why it was in Australia and what it was doing there that day, it still remained a mystery.
Definitely. It's great when you actually get a little bit of closure in that sense of other people have witnessed a similar thing, you know, and that's something I find when I talk to people a lot, is that people aren't really educated about the sort of paranormal and the strange things that kind of go on. So when they do have an experience, it can be quite upsetting, and people do, you know, are ashamed, as you were kind of saying. Yeah. You didn't want to mention to anyone.
That's right, and I found that more and more, because over the years, I've sort of moved also into the sort of the paranormal, and I actually run a number of different ghost tours and have done for 15 years or so around Canberra, and I have to say, on almost every single tour I do, there's around 20 or so people on each tour. There's always at least one, if not two or more people that come out on that tour and actually reveal, even though their friends are around them and they haven't revealed this to their friends or family before, because they're in an environment where there's others that are interested and others that have had experiences with something strange and unexplained. They'll come out and they'll pour their hearts out over some ghostly encounter or strange animal encounter that they hadn't even told their family or their friends before, because they didn't feel, you know, like it was in an environment where they'd be listened to and respected, as much as when you're on a sort of a bus with 20 or so people that are there all interested in the same phenomena. So, it's definitely a point of interest.
Yeah, it is great. That is one great thing about ghost tours, actually, is you're with so many people of such a similar interest, and it's kind of odd when you're in that sort of experience. And it's similar when I do this podcast with people, talking with people from all around the world about these similar topics, and it's fascinating, you know, because most of the time you don't even want to say anything to anyone, because either they're not going to be interested whatsoever and they're just going to think you're full of shit, you know, so you don't. Yeah, it's not really something we talk about openly with a lot of people, but like as you're doing now, it's great to sort of educate and just open the topic up to people, and you know, people can learn and share their experiences. It's, you know, it's really a good thing.
Yeah, and although I basically dedicated the last, quarter of a century of my life so far to not only the Yowie, but other strange animals and paranormal phenomena and the like. And a lot of people, particularly on those tours, for example, or at dinners I have with friends, because, you know, they know I'm interested in this thing, they'll say, so what have you found? What have you solved? You've been looking for chasing shadows, some of them say, for so many years. What have you found? And when I tell them I haven't actually got any conclusive evidence to prove beyond reasonable doubt in scientific terms that these creatures exist or that or what exactly ghosts are, they're quite shocked. They go, well, you're a failure. And I don't see it as a failure at all. I think it's a journey. It's a discovery. Some people can see ghosts. Some people can't. Some people have experiences with strange animals in the bush. Some people don't. And to think that as a worldwide community, we know the answers to everything, and that modern day science just, you know, if it doesn't fit into that box, then it doesn't exist. I think that's fairly short-sighted by the human race. And I think one day, unlikely, I think in my lifetime, but one day, who knows how far away, it might be proved in some way beyond how we know how that will be proved now, that these creatures do exist in some way, and some people can see them and some can't. It's that mystery which really entices me.
Definitely. I can't remember who quoted it now, but it was something along the lines of, you don't decide to see Bigfoot, Bigfoot decides to let you see them, you know. And I think that's great, because that is so the case, you know, people looking their entire life for these types of creatures and coming up with nothing, and then some people just stumble across it, you know. It's
that's entirely right. And since I had that encounter back in 1994, you know, I spent a lot of time, particularly in the 5 or so years after that, looking with a lot of field work out there, weeks on end, looking for the Yowie around Australia, and also, you know, Sasquatch and Bigfoot in North America, and came up with nothing. But yeah, it was just that chance sighting that I had, and the same with others. Others, many people that have sightings of these creatures, you know, they're not Bigfoot researchers or Yowie men, they're just someone going about their own business, and then suddenly they see something. It's a mystery, isn't it?
So from that point after your sighting, went back to uni, and then you've spoken with some friends and they've been open to this. What happens between that time and the period where you're at now? So how did you kind of really dive in and make this your life's work?
Yeah, well, for the first 5 years, I guess, or so after that sighting, I was brought up as someone with a strong scientific sort of reasoning. You know, how could this creature exist? There's no one's ever found any hair samples. No one's found any carcasses. There's no conclusive photos. You know, this thing can't exist. And I was torn about that because I'd seen it with my own eyes. So I actually gave away my career as an economist and spent much of that 5 years trying to find some sort of evidence of the Yowie. And when I started looking for the Yowie, other creatures and strange animals sort of came onto my radar, whether it was the Bunyipa, a swamp-dwelling creature of Aboriginal mythology in Australia, or sea serpents, you know, even to Ogopogo in North America, or, you know, Nessie, the Loch Ness Monster. I became even more fascinated and with the unusual, the unknown, the strange. And I guess I started to broaden my horizons from just focusing on this ape-like beast to anything that was a bit strange. And eventually that also developed into ghosts and curses and things like that. So what started as just a Yowie obsession, I guess, then expanded to cover a lot of the realm of the paranormal and the unexplained. And I was lucky enough during that time. I documented a lot of my adventures and was writing about them for magazines in the United States and in England and I think South Africa, New Zealand, and Australia. And so, while I wasn't making anywhere near the sort of money I would as an economist, I was actually struggling financially, but I was exploring the world and at the same time being able to explore my passion of trying to get to the bottom of these mysteries. So it was it was a great period of time.
Where would you say in your experience, in Australia first of all, where are some pretty big hotspots for Yowie sightings?
Well, Yowie sighting hotspots predominantly up and down the east coast of Australia, so through Queensland, New South Wales and Victoria. And within those areas, there's those states, there's also a number of localised hotspots. So, for example, in Queensland, the Gold Coast hinterland, which is just south of Brisbane and a couple of, an hour or so's drive inland from the coast, like rainforest type area, that's a big hotspot and a time where I've spent many months trying to find evidence of the Yowie without luck. But many other people I've spoken to there have had encounters, and the Yowie up there is particularly, according to eyewitnesses, a smelly variety, possibly because it does live in that subtropical climate, very hot and steamy, and also a lot of rainfall. So if you've got a thick fur on, it's little wonder that most sightings in that area, people actually smell the creature before they see it. So that's southeast Queensland. Another hotspot is southern New South Wales. So from the area where I saw my creature, just near Canberra, to the Victorian border, in the sort of forested area where hardly anyone lives, their national parks or forests, there's reports of Yowies there dating back, as I say, many thousands of years to indigenous inhabitants who sort of lived with the Yowie in their culture for many, many hundreds of years there. And then I guess it also spills across the border in that mountainous region into Victoria. So probably the two main hotspots, I'd have to say, southeast New South Wales and the Gold Coast hinterland. If you want to see a Yowie, beat a path there.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Because this is a question that I'll ask you that I get all the time. What's the difference between, say, an American Bigfoot, Sasquatch, to the Australian Yowie?
I've only seen the Yowie, but I can only sort of answer that on from by way of what other people's eyewitness accounts of the two. From what I can gather, the American Bigfoot or Sasquatch, most reports have that a lot taller than the Australian Yowie. So I guess if the Yowies played the Sasquatch in a game of basketball, the Sasquatch would win. and in fact, in the US and Canada, I rarely came across reports of people seeing, for want of a better word, a juvenile creature, a shorter, younger creature. You know, these creatures aren't born at that height, are they? They've got to grow, if they're a flesh and blood creature, they've got to grow to that height. But in Australia, there are a lot of reports of the smaller Yowie. So some people call them Janjari, other Doolagal down the south coast, where they are small, hairy men that live in the bush, small Yowie type men, not humans. And they're not the 8-9 foot tall type creatures. They're almost like dwarf size. So I think that is a major point of difference between the two, and also the smell, particularly in the Queensland Yowies, the smell associated with the creature. I think that isn't replicated to such an extent in the US, but that may well be because my understanding is most reports in the US come from the cooler climate areas and not those places which are steaming hot and humid all year round. I was going to just bring back to the point there. You were talking about the Blue Mountains just to the inland from Sydney, a mountainous region, also a hotspot for Yowies. But what I've also realised in my research is that mystery animals, whether they be Yowies or in Australia, we also have these big cats. Australia doesn't have any native big cats, but, you know, like a puma type sighting, bunyips, UFOs, anything that's a bit unusual, they seem to be in clusters. So, for example, with the Blue Mountains, it's also not only a Yowie hotspot, but a hotspot for these puma type beasts, also a hotspot for UFOs. And the similar sort of pattern, southeast New South Wales, again, it's high in those in unusual reports. It's like if an area has one particular mystery, it seems to have all of them. I'm not sure if it's something that you've noticed in your travels.
Definitely, yeah. It's as soon as you start looking in one aspect in a certain area, then all of a sudden all these other reports come up, and it seems like that almost in a global sort of sense as well. You know, like I did a podcast earlier this year about the Mothman in Point Pleasant in West Virginia, and the whole thing of like people seeing UFOs, men in black. It's like, what is going on? You know, like there's just, it seems to, have that cluster kind of effect where
that's right.
It's not just one paranormal aspect, it's a lot.
Which is good for, you know, people like yourself and me and others who are fascinated by this, because you can go to, you know, pick out a few key spots in whatever country or state it might be where there's something unusual going on, and you can stay there for a long time because you can delve into the various smorgasbord of mysteries on offer.
Would you say the most compelling evidence for any sort of cryptozoology type creature, you know, we're focusing sort of on the Yowie, but Bigfoot and anything sort of skunk ape, all that, other than your sighting, would you say people's reports would be the most compelling evidence that you've come across?
Unfortunately, yes, because non-believers and really want that conclusive scientific evidence. They want a carcass. They want some sort of new DNA. They want something conclusive. They don't just want someone's, you know, anecdotal evidence. And that has irked me and for many years. And I might just take you back here to shortly after I did become Tim the Owie Man. I went to in that 5 years or so where I was exploring the phenomena around the world, I went to a Bigfoot conference or convention type thing in the US. And I arrived late because my plane from Australia was delayed. But anyway, I got there and there was in the car park outside the conference center, there was a fight. People were belting each other. They were fisticuffs. They were fighting each other. And I thought, geez, what have I got myself into here? And I went up and asked, you know, some of the guys around there, were mainly males, what the heck's going on here? And they said, oh, we've just had the first session of the day, and it's one of the main topics was, is Bigfoot flesh and blood or is Bigfoot paranormal? I said, what do you mean? You know, Bigfoot's flesh and blood, isn't it? And they said, no, there's two camps of thought, you know, that Bigfoot is your flesh and blood type creature, you know, one may be be discovered by science or perhaps a missing link or whatever. And then there's those that believe it's a paranormal being that only some people see it sometimes and it comes and goes, similar, I guess, to a ghost. And I'd never heard of that theory at that stage, and I was quite dismissive of it, of the paranormal theory. But as I've spent more and more time looking into the phenomena, it sounds crazy because a lot of people think they don't believe in Bigfoot to start with, and now there's people saying not only is Bigfoot something that is there, but it's a paranormal beast. It's a ghost.
Yeah.
And I'm actually leaning more to that camp now due to my lack of being able to find anyone else that has conclusive evidence. Maybe Bigfoot is some sort of paranormal being that people, indigenous peoples in various cultures, including in Australia, have seen over time, and that you have to have a close association perhaps with that environment, with that landscape, and you're able to see. So I'm tending more towards that after 25 years. And I'm not as obsessed or hung up on having to go out there and find that bone or find that that carcass to show to everyone else. I'm sort of more saying, well, some people see it, some people don't, just like ghosts. You know, believe if you like. Who knows? You might one day have your own encounter.
Exactly. That's really, yeah, interesting, isn't it? Because I've definitely come across that theory as well, that it is something more paranormal. That's why some people see it, some people don't. And then after a while, it does start to make more sense, because if it was a flesh and bone kind of creature, potentially more people would be able to see it, you know. But and since we don't have that evidence, you know, it's why not? Why couldn't it be that?
And that's right, particularly back 25 years ago when I was sort of on the flesh and blood bandwagon. I was thinking, well, now people are getting all these fancy cameras and, you know, you can't go anywhere without there being a camera hidden in the bush almost, or someone recording something, or... And the advancement of science, you know, over the next few years, we're going to find evidence of this creature. But, you know, in the time since, there's been nothing that's really been discovered to show that. So, yeah, it's 25 years ago, I would have almost laughed, almost got involved in that fight myself. But but now, yeah, I'm open, well and truly open to both views, if not leaning more towards the paranormal.
Can you just comment a little bit, and you did touch on this, and this is something that is always interests me with, you know, the whole Yowie topic, is that Indigenous elders, you know, have passed down these stories through generations. In your research, what have you kind of come across that really stood out to you in these Indigenous stories?
With the Indigenous stories, it's quite a tricky topic. A lot of Indigenous people find me rather than me finding them. That's Indigenous people with Yowie stories, because quite often they'll say, hey, the Yowie, I hear you're nicknamed the Yowie man, you go looking for the Yowie. You're a white fella, so I'm a non-Indigenous Australian. You know, that's part of our culture. You know, how are you experiencing this? And they're not upset, but they're sort of laying ownership, I guess, to the Yowie phenomenon, because it's been in many of their cultures for many thousands of years. And they'll, after I strike up a conversation with them or meet them, what's really noticeable is that, you know, in a non-Indigenous culture, it's, you know, some people believe in Yowies, some don't, most don't, and it's talked about as one of these mystery, unusual creatures. Many of the Indigenous peoples that I've spoken to or communities that I've visited, it's not spoken in that way. It's spoken in the same way as there's a kangaroo out in the bush. You know, it's spoken that, you know, there's not even a question mark whether there are Yowies or not. There are Yowies. They're part of our culture. Don't go up in that part of the bush because they're there. Keep our kids out of the way because we don't want them to be hurt if there's a Yowie there, whatever. So it's remarkable to the difference, I guess, between the Indigenous and the non-Indigenous communities, the way they, I guess, reflect on the Yowie.
It definitely adds a whole other aspect to the whole background of the Yowie, doesn't it?
It certainly does. And because I am a non-Indigenous person, although I've touched on how on some of the origins of the Yowie in terms of an Indigenous culture, I rarely talk about it at any level of detail, because to me it's their story, and they've They've told me that it is their story, and that the indigenous stories of the Yowie is their stories to tell, and I respect that. So although I'm happy to give you that sort of, I guess, background to it, I won't delve into any specific cases or specifics to the origins of the Yowie. That's up to the individual indigenous communities who it's a very special part of their culture.
People seem to love ghost stories. You know, it's always something that's people are always asking me and asking what I've heard, what I've experienced. So what's some of your most fascinating, most compelling kind of ghost encounters you've had?
I guess one of the more compelling encounters I've had was in an old house, old for Australian terms, 100 years or so, at a place called Bungendore, between Canberra and the coast. And it was actually on a stakeout, for want of a better word, to try and experience the ghost there. Often when you go places, you don't really have any experience. But this is 20 years ago or so. Up until that time, I hadn't had a ghost encounter. Was in this old homestead, which at the time was converted into a restaurant, and we sort of, a group of us, were in there overnight. And suddenly, in the early evening, I've witnessed an apparition. You can only describe it as an apparition of a man running at full pace through the main hallway of this old building, vaporizing, passing through a locked wooden door. And I saw the ghost for a number of seconds, have no other explanation other than it's something beyond our realms of understanding. That was my first ghost encounter, I guess. The backstory behind that was that there was a fellow, I think it was William Gallagher, I think was his name, that had, during the Great Depression of around 1930 or so, was living in the house and had taken his own life one Sunday morning while he'd sent his kids up to the local newsagent to buy the paper or the comics, as they did every Sunday morning. And while they were up there, he had taken his own life in the room in which we're based. And it's thought that his ghost haunts that building ever since. And it was him. It was he that we're looking for. And I'm pretty sure his ghost that I actually saw. I guess that started me off on the track of trying to see and report on other ghostly phenomena all around Australia.
Great. What are the sort of things that you come across when you run your ghost tours?
A lot of people come on a ghost tour and they'll send me an email prior to booking or booking, you know, are we going to see a ghost? Is there a money-back guarantee? Of course, there is no money-back guarantee when it comes to ghosts. Otherwise, it'd be very poor because, of course, not on every tour does something occur. However, I'm constantly surprised at the number of times someone experiences something that you can't explain, along the lines of a ghost. And I'd say it's probably 80% of tours, but it's not always something where, say, there's 20 people on a tour. There's not 20 people standing in that house all seeing that ghost of a man run at full pace down the corridor. It's not that. It's only on a few occasions has sort of a whole group had a group experience. It's more individuals or couples or ones and twos having a side experience during the tour. And whether or not it's because we're in large numbers and we're, you know, scaring away the ghosts and the spirits or what, I can't quite explain. But what I am buoyed by, I guess what I'm surprised by, are the number of unexplained happenings. Certainly not all visions, sometimes, you know, poltergeist activity, people being pushed around, quite often smells, unusual smells that are associated with a particular spirit. It's those sort of things that do occur on tours. And yeah, and in quite any numbers I thought would be a lot lower than they are. So I guess in 25 years of researching unusual things and happenings around Australia, I've got quite a few case notes and files, and I've recently just a couple of months ago released a book called Haunted and Mysterious Australia. It's a coffee table style book which catalogues, I think it's around 80 of those investigations, whether they be ghosts or haunted or cursed shipwrecks to strange lights in the sky, Min Min lights, UFOs, Bunyip reports, sea serpents, you name it. That's called Haunted and Mysterious Australia. You can get it online wherever you are in the world. If you just do a search for Haunted and Mysterious Australia, the subtitles are Bunyips, Yowies, Phantoms and Other Strange Phenomena. And in recent times, just this year, I've started to develop a web series exclusive to YouTube where I'm researching and then presenting the findings of various mysteries around Australia. And the first couple are already released on YouTube. So if you have a look at Tim the Yowie Man, the series on YouTube, you'll see a mini documentary there we've made exploring one of Australia's most haunted houses for the ghost aficionados out there, and also an exploration of Lake George, which is, I guess, Australia's answer to the Bermuda Triangle, Australia's version of the Bermuda Triangle. It's an inland waterway where all sorts of strange happenings have been occurring for many years. And yeah, we've done a nice little episode on that on Tim the Owie Man, the series.
Really great for people who are listening to this podcast.
Yeah, no, it's great fun filming it. But of course, as anyone out there that does any sort of filming knows, as soon as you pull out the cameras, the ghosts seem to disappear. it's the sort of series where we're not we're certainly not making anything up. We're just recording whatever happens when we're there. Sometimes something will happen, and quite often it won't. But we'll be presenting the history and the amazing landscapes associated with those phenomena.
That's great. I think that's something that people don't realise too. Is, you know, when you have all these episodic type shows of ghost hunting and how edited they all are, because, you know, when you're hunting or like researching all night long, that's, you know, 8+ hours of footage, you know.
That's right.
And like, I mean, you're editing it down to what, maybe like 20, 40 minute sort of episodes. Like, it's not a lot happens potentially.
No, unless
in that
you're
8 hours.
Very lucky.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you're not going to have much, you're not going to have much action. But, and that's also the case with the ghost tours, although there's 80% of tours at least someone hasn't experienced. A lot of the tours are also about delving into and shining the spotlight on what is quite often unusual and little known histories of the place. And I guess most ghost busters, most ghost tour participants, most people interested in ghosts are also got that little bit of interest in history, the unusual history, the interesting history of a place which you wouldn't otherwise find out unless you went on a ghost tour. In Australia, the number of ghost tours has, and I'm sure this is reflected worldwide, has absolutely exploded in the last 10 to 20 years. There used to be a handful in Australia. Now there's hundreds. And constantly the feedback from all these ghost tours is, you know, sure, some people are having encounters, which is great, but it's exposing a new generation of people to the history, to the different layers of history of these various locations, whether they be in the bush or a house in the city or whatever. It's something which is I think adding to the value of people respecting the past.
Well, thank you so much, Tim, for taking the time coming on the podcast and sharing all of your years of knowledge with us. I'll definitely put some links to your book, which I'll definitely have to get a copy of, and your YouTube series, which looks really great as well. So people definitely can go and learn a little bit more about some Australian aspects of the paranormal world.
Yeah, and thanks very much for having me. And you said there are lots of, you know, my 25 years of knowledge. I don't claim to be an expert on any of this. I'm just out there trying to soak up the information, trying to find answers, having a fun journey along the way. Yeah, I think I wouldn't call myself a completely knowledgeable on all the subjects, and I don't think anyone who studied it for their whole lifetime would be. There's just too much unknown out there to be like that, I guess.
Once again, guys, if you enjoyed this episode, feel free to go check out Tim. All of his social links are in the description of this podcast. And of course, you know, if you enjoyed this episode, feel free to like, subscribe, follow. We put up a new episode every fortnight. And, you know, we're always looking for topics that you guys might be interested in as well. So let me know what you might like to see on the podcast. Definitely take that into account. Jump onto our Facebook if you're interested, Paranormal Thoughts Podcast. See all of the latest episodes going on over there as well. So all of those links in the description of the podcast as well. Thanks again to Tim, and thank you guys for hanging around and enjoying a bit of some paranormal talk today. I'll catch you guys later.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.